Welcome to the Legacy and Faith Show, featuring estate and tax attorney Paul Grant. The Legacy and Faith Show is about the journey of discovering how to create plans that protect wealth and family values for generations. And now the host of the Legacy and Faith Show, Paul Grant.
Along with co-host Mark Holland, it's the Legacy and Faith Show with estate and tax planning attorney Paul Grant. Paul is actually standing to deliver this week as we record this show.
If I stand, you know I'm serious.
He's serious about the most common questions that he always seems to get from people when they're wondering about estate planning, tax issues, and we thought we'd kind of go through a few of these. And do you want me to just kind of go in order of the list you gave me just randomly throw them out?
Yeah, we're just going to be kind of a little... Today's show is called Random, I guess.
Random.
Because it's kind of a little bit of a placeholder because actually, it's specifically, if you're listening to the show on Wednesday, I'm still in Indonesia. So if you've been listening to the past couple podcasts or the past couple weeks of the show, I'm in Indonesia. So I'm sure that I'm going to have a follow-up next week with what happened in Indonesia, and then we'll come back to estate planning after that again. So today is going to be a little bit of a random show, but that's okay because these really are the most common questions I get. There's no particular order to them, and so we'll just see where the conversation goes. How's that?
Sounds good. I think the first question even on your list is probably real foundational, and why does every person, regardless of net worth, need an estate plan?
It's really... one of the things that I hear a lot of, I can't tell you how many times I have been talking with somebody and they find out I'm an estate planner and the comment may go something like this, which is, well, if I had more money, I would get an estate plan. And I wish I could sit there and say, okay, why don't you sit down and let's have a talk because you don't understand the potential dangers that you are embarking on if you don't have any type of estate plan around you. So number one issue is that estate plan has nothing to do with how much money you have. Hmm. Now, the more money you do have, it seems to be more of a natural progression or a natural inclination to say, oh, I better get this in order because I want to protect my spouse. I want to protect children. I want to protect the ministries I give to. I want to protect other family members or however your estate wants to be dispersed, then the more you have, the more natural it is to think in those terms. However, coming back to my proposition, which is money has nothing to do about estate planning. At least out of the gate, it doesn't.
Okay.
So, number one is that estate planning is more broad than just a will or a trust because those are the disposition documents. That's a if I die, what happens document. But my bigger concern for most listeners and for most individuals that I meet is this. How do I protect you and make sure that everything is going to be all right for you during your lifetime? And so here's the example. I have a health incident. I'm rushed to the hospital. Who has the legal authority to speak on my behalf? Now, if you're married, the first thought is, well, my wife does or my husband does. You know, the ring is not as powerful as it used to be. It used to be that if you throw a big enough temper tantrum and you could just show, well, I'm the spouse, that people would march into order. But the problem is that this world is full of attorneys. So we've kind of done it to ourselves because now hospitals and doctors, we're in a very litigious society over the past 20 years. Mm. If you sneeze wrong, you could be liable for something, so it seems. Mm. And so being in a litigious society, we have needed to then bring in stronger boundaries. So that means hospitals have more do's and don'ts. They have different contracts. They have agreements. Now we have even some states limit medical malpractice of how much you can sue a doctor for. And now the price of medical care has gone extraordinary. It's really not because the machines cost so much more. It's really, unfortunately, because being a doctor just it costs so much more to be in practice. And a part of what costs so much more is that they can be sued. So why does that have to do with estate planning? Because we need to demonstrate who has legal authority so doctors will listen to the voice when someone is in a medical emergency. Hmm. And maybe not even a medical emergency. What happens if we start having memory problems? And by the way, memory problems can happen at virtually any age. Unfortunately, as heartbreaking as it is, I know people in their 50s who have Alzheimer's, who have memory issues that outside of a miracle of God are not going to be medically changed. And so it's not just something that happens to you in your 70s and 80s, even though we associate it with an age group that is older. No, what happens if you all of a sudden begin to have more permanent health issues, specifically memory issues? If you don't have strong estate planning documents specifically at that time, it could be too late. And so estate planning, the first and primary purpose of estate planning is that I need to protect my clients during their lifetime. Then when someone passes away, I can turn my attention towards what does the disposition document say? How do we divide things? How do we protect those that we leave behind? But my first objective is I need to make sure that my clients are safe. And that happens by powers of attorney and medical, mental, financial, end-of-life documents, HIPAA agreements, organ donation. So do you want to be an anatomical gift giver? There's multiple things that come into play when we deal with power of attorneys.
Are these documents then that the spouse, for instance, would have to be able to produce at the hospital if there is an emergency?
Oftentimes, yes, there will be a requirement. So that's often a tricky wicket, isn't it? That how do we, because most of us don't carry our power of attorneys in our glove box of our car.
Right.
So there's solutions. There's a company called DocuBank that I actually give to my clients as part of working with me. And that's a card that is kept in your wallet that we upload all of these different power of attorneys into the system so that if you walked into a hospital, that card would give a PIN number and literally within 5 minutes, those power of attorneys can be seen by the hospital, and it expedites your care because they know exactly who to listen to and who has the legal authority to assist you when you're in a compromised state. Another thing you can do is you can take your healthcare power of attorney or your end-of-life document to your physician and ask them to put it in your medical records. Washington is actually one of the better states that is connected as far as medical records. And so if you land in a hospital in Tacoma, but you're from Bellingham or you're from the Seattle or North area, wherever you may or may not be, that whole system is interconnected. So by having it in the system, it'll actually give the hospital a greater opportunity to find that and again, know whose voice they are to listen to and respond to. Otherwise, the doctor is going to take over what they're required by their oath and by their legal guidelines, which is to do what's in your best interest according to their decisions, maybe not the decisions of those who you've wanted or spoken to about these health incidences. So power of attorneys is why every single person needs an estate plan, because this isn't just about dying, it's about living.
Okay, well, kind of moving on to a little bit different subject then. Another very commonly asked question, will the government or state take everything if I do not have an estate plan?
Right. Really, one of the most common things I hear people say is, well, I don't want the government to get it. Okay, well, let's talk about the government getting stuff. Number one, if you do not have an estate plan, so you never got around to it, So you've been listening to me now for years, and you still haven't gotten around to it. Number one, move into action, because I don't want you and your family to be found at this stage of not having anything. So number two, what does it mean for the government to get it all? I don't want the government to get it all. Well, I agree. They're not very good keepers of what I give them, so why give them more? That really comes from a tax theory. It doesn't come from a, I'm missing an estate document. So the big deal about estate planning is that it is your decisions that are going to be honored versus what the law says is, in essence, pre-designed for you. So the necessity of the law is that it has to think in broad terms. It can't give you a deference over your next door neighbor. So what the law tries to do is take multiple people, all of society, and say, what is the most fair thing that would be spread across everybody should this incident happen? So in estate planning, what the law has determined is that if you have a spouse, it'll go to them, unless it's a second marriage. Well, I'll come back to that. If you don't have a spouse, then we'll look for kids. If you don't have kids, we will go back up and try to find your grandparents. If you don't have grandparents, we'll find your parents. If you don't have parents, we'll find your siblings. So there is an entire hierarchy of pecking order of how your finances, should it land in the hands of the court, which is called probate, should it land in the hands of the court, that the law has made a predetermination of exactly where things go versus you determining where they go. So maybe you don't like your brother. And yet, if you don't have kids, and you and your spouse died in a common car accident, or your spouse has already predeceased you, or whatever the case may or may not be, there's a high likelihood that your sibling is going to get it, but you don't like them. So that's a problem. So really, estate planning is about your voice giving directions to the court that says, this is what I want to have happen. And it overrides the predetermined law that says, if you didn't use your voice, this is what's going to happen. Now, I could tell you story after story of bad news of what happens if you don't use your voice. So, for example, I'll give you just a couple quick ones. Number one, a client of mine walks in and she is the responsible person in the family. So, therefore, she is helping close her uncle's estate. The problem is that uncle only had one child, and that child is an addict. In and out of jail all the time, and is an addict. It's a bummer. But because there was no estate plan, guess who gets everything according to the law? Not married, so there's no spouse. So they were divorced many, many years ago. So now it falls to the only child, and now this only child receives a decent size amount of money, and he's an addict and in and out of jail. Instead, if we could have gotten this person's voice around estate planning, we could have protected the son. We could have protected his only child from using it for nefarious lifestyle or having no money skills, having no ability to carve out a financial future with this nice windfall. So there's one example, and there's multiple that I could tell you over and over and over, that if we could bring back the person and say, is this what you really want to have happen? It's my assumption. Of course, I can only assume. This is not fact. This is only an assumption. I'm assuming that that person would have said, no, I actually want to make sure that that my only heir is taken care of and protected and not potentially killed by what I'm giving them. So we need to use your voice, and that's why we need an estate plan. No, the government's not going to get it. There's a hierarchy of a pecking order by which finances must flow. And so it's not that the government's going to get it. It's that they're going to dictate who gets it. And that may be just as bad as them getting it.
Okay, some of the most commonly asked questions of Paul Grant when he talks about estate and tax planning issues with people. We'll look at some more of those questions here in just a moment before we take a break. Paul, how do people get in touch with you if they need some help?
Well, you can head over to our website. It's legacyandfaith.com. You can find past podcasts. You can find upcoming educational sessions. And there's even a link there that says, please communicate with us. I really would like to hear from you. Whether it's to assist you, whether you have a comment, whether you have a question, please head over to legacyandfaith.com.
Back with more of the Legacy and Faith Show with Paul Grant in just a moment.
Hi, this is Paul Grant with the Legacy and Faith Show. Hosea 4:6 says, my people are destroyed for the lack of knowledge. God's people need to be fully prepared in managing their finances and ensuring that their wealth is properly transferred. It is our passion to bring this knowledge to the body of Christ. If your church would benefit from having a financial and estate session that is biblically based, then I encourage you to reach out to us so that we can help design and implement a specific and strategic session for your church. Or if you are interested in estate planning services, then I likewise encourage you to reach out to us. You can go to legacyandfaith.com and receive all the information you need. Again, go to legacyandfaith.com.
Your photos, slides, scrapbooks, and home movies are invaluable and irreplaceable. Barry Kenny here with the Bear Services. Call us to save them as digital files to be stored electronically and shared liberally. We will even come to you so they stay in your possession. Go to thebearservices.com for more information. That's thebearservices.com.
We now return to the Legacy and Faith Show, featuring estate and tax attorney Paul Grant, and continue today's practical discussion to apply biblical principles for kingdom purposes.
Along with co-host Mark Holland, Legacy and Faith Show with Paul Grant this week, looking at the most common questions that people ask Paul. And one of the most common questions, I would assume, is how can I avoid probate? Can you avoid probate?
Oh, absolutely. There's multiple ways to avoid probate. So let's take a quick discussion, just very briefly, of what is probate. So if I were to die and I own property, number one, if it's titled, so I'm married, so if it's titled with my wife as the joint owner, she wins because she didn't die. So therefore, she gets it all. Last man standing is what joint property means. She does not have to go to probate in order to capture that asset because she's on title. That can happen with a bank account, with a house, cars, investments, multiple things. Now, you can't have a joint IRA, so it can't happen with retirement plans. So therefore, you need to name a beneficiary. So there's another way to avoid probate is, do you have all of your beneficiaries listed? The problem is that many people move institutions, financial institutions, banking institutions, and we forget to update those things. We have life insurance policies with our ex-wife on it, or with children that are not ready, and you didn't want that. It was serving a different purpose, but it's still enacted. So relying upon beneficiary changes and or joint ownership can produce a potential result that you're not expecting. So for example, with joint ownership, it's a very common thing, and I ask that you please not do this if you're listening, but it's a very common thing to say, well, what if I just bring my son or daughter onto my checking account? And that way they have easy access to it. Or if I sign them on to my house, when I die, they're a joint owner. Well, there's many potential problems with that. Number one, what if something went wrong in your child's life? Something, in other words, they're not being disrespectful with their money. They're not stealing your money. So they're not being that child. But something doesn't go according to plan. They're in a car accident and now they have a creditor. They get divorced. And so that is intended to be your money, but now they're on joint title.
Really?
And so what are some of the potential dangers is that it allows any liability of that child to sneak over and potentially take it. Now, this is, I was walking down the halls of court one day, and I overheard a conversation between a client and the attorney that I was standing next to. And so I stopped and listened. So I admit I was eavesdropping. I'm sorry. So I was walking and I had to stop for this conversation because the client, who was older, said, but it was my money. And the attorney's response was, yes, but your daughter was on the account. And the client's response again was, but it was my money. I just did it so that she could help me. And the attorney's response again was, yes, but she was a joint owner, so the creditor was able to take it.
I had no idea.
So if you bring on a joint owner and they run into financial hardship. So again, I don't think that in that scenario, I didn't hear that the daughter ran off with the money. Those are the extravagant stories, but it does happen. So that's another good reason not to do it. But rather, she was not being as careful with her finances. Someone sued her, and because her name is on the account, she had legal access to the account. It was legally taken, even though it was supposed to be for mom.
Wow.
Now, these are the scenarios that we don't think through. So versus when we can use a trust model. Now there's a fiduciary relationship that shields us from that potential grabbing. So joint ownership is often something we need to think through the entire possibilities. In addition, if I have multiple children, so I have two girls, Rebecca and Gabriella. So now let's say Rebecca, because she's the oldest, so usually the oldest gets stuck with all this. So now I'm going to stick Rebecca with coming onto my bank account. And let's say that at the end of the day, there's, I don't care, $50,000 in that bank account, and that's all I have. Well, my intent is to share equally with my daughters. As a matter of fact, I even might have a will that says everything goes to my daughters equally. But what I've done now is legally, because Rebecca is on my account, she now becomes the immediate legal owner of everything the moment I die. So now she is supposed to share. Number one, if she's a little turkey, she doesn't want to share, her sister can't compel it because it's legally hers.
Wow.
Number two, if indeed my daughter does what is right and follows the terms of the will, she actually has given a gift to her sister and must file a gift tax return now because Rebecca became the legal owner, daughter number one. And so even at death, there are potential legal hazards in setting up an estate plan where everybody's on the account or just one child is on the account. In addition, they take over with what's called a split basis. So if you bring them onto a house, it means that they take the house at whatever you paid for it versus if someone passes away, they get what's called a step up. In other words, the fair market value as of the date of death. So there's a lot of interplay in this one, what I consider to be a very potentially dangerous and wrong decision almost 100% of the time. Almost. That it's not. I'm not saying it's for certain, but I'm saying if you have done this or this is what you are thinking about, this is why you need to come and sit down and have a full discussion with an estate planning attorney. So all of that, because we were talking about joint ownership, which is a way to avoid probate, which is the most common way to avoid probate, or a beneficiary designation avoids probate, or we can set up a trust and that avoids probate. So there's different ways that we can stay out of the court system and stay out of the snare of probates.
Mm-hmm. Well, these are random questions this week. I don't know if we have time to, can you give me just a 1 or 2 minute answer on I have a living will, so I'm set, right?
Yeah, so living will is
what is a living will?
Good. That's your end of life document what people fondly refer to it as pull the plug.
Okay.
And we mistake it because it has a similar terminology as will versus living will, and we think that that is going to govern the estate plan. I hear that all the time.
Mm.
Your will is your disposition. Your living will is whether or not you want to live in a certain condition or a reduced quality of life condition. And that is a, I'm empowering somebody to go ahead and remove me from life support or end medical treatment so that I can pass away. They're very, very different things. And both of them are always needed, along with those powers of attorney that we were talking about at the top of the show.
Mm-hmm. Okay, some very commonly asked questions for Paul Grant and his practice as an estate and tax planning attorney. He has many shows that expound on these subjects, entire broadcasts on these subjects. I know we've done some shows on probate. I don't remember, though, that that thing about being being on the checking account, the joint account.
And yeah, there's more hazards in there than people realize.
Yeah, because I... Wow. So lots of questions and lots of answers with Paul Grant. If people are listening and they do want to find out about your services, how do they get in touch with you, Paul?
Head over to our website at legacyandfaith.com. There's podcasts like Mark just mentioned. There's ways to sign up for educational shows or just hit the email button and ask me a question.
Okay. That's legacyandfaith.com. Always great stuff with the Legacy and Faith Show with Paul Grant here on KCIS.
Thank you for joining us for the Legacy and Faith Show. You can find more information about the show and Paul Grant at legacyandfaith.com. Join us next week at the same time as we learn to build God's kingdom and continue our journey on how to protect wealth and family values for generations. All discussions on the Legacy and Faith Show are intended to be about general legal issues. If a situation applies to you, then we encourage you to seek specific legal advice. Please do not rely upon any discussions from this program in place of having a personal relationship with your attorney. Any listener question that may have been answered also does not constitute legal advice and does not establish a client-attorney relationship.